I'm Dimae Roberts, stage and studio. We're listening to music composed by Heather Perkins, who is the composer and sound designer for the new dance production of Annika Impermanence. My guest is the creator of this dance piece, world-class and award-winning dancer and choreographer Min Tran. He is about to return to the stage after 8 years. Min debuts his most personal work to date with Min Tran and Company. Born in Vietnam, Min Tran immigrated here in 1980 as a political refugee. Trained in classical Vietnamese opera and contemporary dance, Tran has created more than 29 original choreographic works since 1989. In 2003, Min Tran and Company was awarded a production and touring grant from the Doris Duke Fund for Dance of the National Dance Project. And he's here with me right now in my studio. Min Tran, welcome back to stage and studio.
Thank you, and thanks for having me here.
I think it's been 8 years since I interviewed you, because I believe, if I can remember, at that time you were announcing your retirement. Is that correct, Min?
That's indeed. It's true. It has been a while since I had to think about getting back on stage.
Well, so it's been an eight-year journey. I mean, I think that's really interesting that you chose this time. I know you've been choreographing since that time, too, with companies like Northwest Dance Project. I remember that. But this time, you're doing something very personal and momentous in your life, and it's brought you back to actually dancing. And even during that eight-year absence, were you still dancing, though? I mean, were you still doing, you know, practicing and doing stuff on your own?
I still, actually, I was making cameo appearances for a fundraising event for nonprofit organizations such as Our House. And also, of course, being a teacher in dance, I still have to keep up with the movement in my body.
Yeah, you're now associate professor at Reed College Dance, right?
Yes, and that's exactly the reason why that I've been absent from performance, was I just channel all of my creative energies into teachings rather than in performing.
Well, let's talk about those creative energies. You are doing something that's very personal and momentous, and I want to talk a little bit about that journey, your decision to return to the dance stage. Can you kind of guide us through that journey?
I never thought that I would ever actually grace the stage again after I presented the last work, Kiss, that was presented by and commissioned by Weibert. But since then, it was a major event happened in my life that I just lost my parents. And it's so personal to the point where I say, you know, I can certainly create a work. I can certainly direct it, the work. But there's something so personal that I myself have to be included in the pictures. Hence the decision to come back just for this.
Well, I too understand about grief and loss, and especially of a parent, and then wanting to express yourself somehow. And this is very recent for you. So I remember actually doing, you know, some radio pieces and some writing after too. There's something about that, though, that helps you in the grieving process, doesn't it?
It is. It's I was looking for channels for just to get my grief out of the way, in a way. And this is the only way that I would know how.
So when you go about taking something so personal and expressing it through choreography, what's the artistic process like for you? Like, where did you start? And, you know, because your loss has been recent, and I want to respect that. But I also think it's beautiful to talk about how an artist can take something so tragic, you know, and so momentous and personal, and then transform that into a work. So what kind of things did you start with, and how did you build upon it?
It is a very raw emotional. And as an artist, I know, and I've been teaching the same philosophy as well, is you need to strike it when the iron's hot, in a sense of that. And so it is so raw, and at times where I couldn't sleep, then I need to process through this grief. And the best way to do it, just go back into this dance studio and work it out of my emotional process in it. It is actually was indeed in 2 years in the making. As watching my mom's health decline, I was already going through this so-called creative process, but also was a grief process for me. It was just like I was not ready to share in the public until just last summer when we started to call back my company members to start rehearsing.
So when you start moving into the dance studio and you start bringing people into to collaborate, how does that happen? Do you start thinking, okay, I've sort of sketched a piece dance-wise, and then I want to start bringing some other folks in?
Well, to begin with, it was so personal that I was not sure when I'm ready to share that, even with my dancers, in the most intimate setting in the studio, just all of us in there. What really helped and then was boosting me for beginning the process to share with people was a tradition that I actually was just learning during the funeral traditions that I discovered myself through the temples as we're going through the process of the funeral to take care of my mom's. And then of course, 7 months later, and when my dad passed away, the whole process again, the revisit. And that, in a way, is sort of like telling me the message is somewhere. Like, this is the foundation and also sort of like the guideline for me to structure the piece.
Your title is Annika Impermanence. What does that mean to you?
Well, nothing's last forever. So in a way that I come to mind was like everything that I cherish so much that I know I have to learn to let go. And that's sort of like the major point of the philosophy in the Buddhist tradition is for us to going through this grief that we have to know that there's a point of suffering. And part of the suffering is to letting go of something you hold so dearly. And so here's my parents, the most loved one, that to learn to let go is that's a major part of the impermanence that they've been doing it for all of this over 2,800 years ago of this teaching. So we need to learn this suffering before we can go on with our own life.
What does Annika mean?
Annika is actually literally is from Pali words, and it means impermanence. That's the direct translations from it.
What is Pali?
Pali is a language that from the written original language written in Buddhism teachings. So
if you just joined us, you're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dimay Roberts. My guest is dancer and choreographer Min Tran, and his new work is Annika Impermanence. And it debuts February 21st through the 24th at Reed College's Performing Arts Building. Min, I'm just very impressed that you can, you know, delve into this and bring artists to be collaborating with you on this process. Who are some of the people that you're collaborating with?
I literally handpicked it out of these people and strategized it from the very beginning. A set and light designer, Peter Cassanders, who also my wonderful colleague at Reed College, he was part of the building committees for this space. And so I really targeted Peter for this because he know inside out the anatomy of this building and wants to him to use all of his knowledge and the advantage and opportunities of how we best can use and transform this space into some theatrical that no one ever thought before. And so he's my light and set designer for this piece. Heather Perkins has been working with me for over 2 decades. So she understood my language because, you know, I'm not a musician, but somehow she really understands what in the late home from an artist to an artist of what I was hoping for. And I think this subject matter, she held it so dearly to herself as well. I really want to tap into her creative process in this one. Projection designer Marilee Zerns, who has been working with my wonderful choreographer colleague in East Coast, and now she just happened to move to Portland. And so I took the opportunity right away and grabbed her as much as I can with her times, her busy time here. She understood how dance is working with medium such as projections so that it's not about to fight with it, but how we can deliver the same message without distractions to the audience's eyes. And costume designer Sandy Hedgepath, who I worked with her on the last two productions before. She has a sensibility of to bring the contemporary aspect into this Asian's look, into the outlook of the costume. So I really want to use her this time again for this project. And then, of course, the performers, I literally handpicked them. It's just because they have to have the professional facility from their body to do it, but also the mental capacity to deal with such an incredible hard subject to deal with. Suzanne Chi, Magretta Hansen, Sean Keelock, Carla Min, Andres Peraza, and Rachel Slater. Every single one of these individuals has their own company or choreographic project in their own hands. And so they know the process inside out. And that's why, in a way, I'm just blessed that to have incredible performers to deal in the subject right from the get-go. And then, of course, I even recruit you because some of the personal diary journal entries that I want to share with the audience, that you have such a beautiful voice, and so I want to bring it in there as well. And then we also asking Brent Wilson-Smith, who is going under by Savage Nightingale. He has such an incredible voice, and he will actually be the guest composer for the final part of the performance as well.
Well, since you mentioned the journal entries, I was going to ask you if it's okay to play a clip that Heather Perkins mixed with her music with my voice. And it was really an honor to have you ask me to do this because the journal entries are very personal. They go through this whole process of grief and denial and sort of the five stages, right? Is it five stages? I think it's the five stages. It could be seven. Yeah. It could be like forever, yes. Too. But it goes through all these different stages of grief and acceptance. And then also, I felt there was a renewal of the human spirit in your journal entry. So let's is it okay to play a clip right now with Brent Woodson-Smith and me and Heather Perkins Music? No matter how much pain I feel, I know I will survive my loss. I am not facing it alone.
I am on a roller coaster of emotions, and I look for the day to see beyond my anger or denial.
I look for the day when I accept my own peace. You just heard a section of Min Tran's journal entries, which I narrated with Brent Woodson-Smith for his upcoming original new work, Annika, Impermanence, which was inspired by the loss of his parents and his coming to terms with that experience. Annika, Impermanence debuts February 21st through the 24th at Reed College's Performing Arts Building in the Massey Performance Lab. That's located on the first floor at 3203 Southeast Woodstock Boulevard in Portland, and you can get tickets at eventbrite.com, but I also have that link at stageandstudio.org and kbu.fm/stageandstudio where you can hear a podcast of this interview. I was wondering if you would mind talking about the spiritual aspects of Annika, Impermanence. I found that your journal entries had that within them, and I was just wondering, you know, how much of the farewell ritual with your parents inspired that?
That's exactly how I that was the foundation to have these productions in that. Impermanence, in a sense that I follow through the Buddhist traditions on 49th day of the death. So when my parents pass away, for every 7 days, we have to pray at the temple, and for 7 weeks, because these 49 days is so important to these dying souls that they sort of wandering around until they reach the gate. So in that sense, that Annika, the performance was divided in 7 sections with 7 minutes each and by 7 dancers. just to follow this Buddhist tradition in this spiritual aspect of itself, that I thought it was, in a way, is brilliant in a way that I just want to design it that way. But also is our grief process, that there's nothing to stop, in a sense, like it just keep going. And there must be a resolution for our human spirits that we will survive through this loss somehow.
Every culture has a different way of grieving and different rituals. And I'm wondering, having seen what funerals are like here in American culture, you know, if there's such a thing, you know, what does the Vietnamese culture speak to you of when we're talking about funeral rituals?
And actually that was, and thanks to Reed College, that they always just keep asking me for all of this year of teachings. I just did not have time to do such a major production until now. And it was because of a sabbatical year of last year that they was able to give to me. And the whole year, I travel all over Southeast Asia and just to observe the funeral traditions. And until just last year, then I just realized that there was vast difference between the American way of how we deal with death and how Southeast Asian traditions dealing with these funeral rites. One of the major part that I want to establish right in the production is to, like, here we all wear black to the funeral wake, but over there it's a sea of white everywhere we go, and the attires we were wearing is always white. And so when the audience coming into this room of this black box, right away they will know that the room is being built, is another room within the room, and it's all white. And the dancers' costumes are in seven shades of white as well. These traditions is one of the major element that I noticed right away from my research, from my sabbatical. And also that we believe in the Southeast Asians, we believe death is just another journey. So it's not the end. Perhaps it's also the beginning of the new life. Most of traditions in Southeast Asia still believe in reincarnations. So the journeys of the funeral rite is about opening the gate for another journeys to about our loved one to about to depart on. And so that's how I want to look at this show in that sense, was the final crossing is also the final farewell, that they may leave this earth, but their soul and spirits now have crossed to another dimension, and they're still out there somewhere looking out for us, perhaps, but also we can still always communicate with them. As a matter of fact, I had a shrine in my house still, and I still burn the incense, and I talk to them every day.
I just know from my experience with my mom and having a Buddhist funeral, you know, I found that, you know, the honoring keeps going, you know, is like with the ancestors, you know, it's like every year you have to do something, you know, to keep that connection going. And so it's not a matter of, from my perspective of, okay, here, you know, the funeral's over, we don't have to worry about having another, you know, get together again. It's more like the rituals keep going, don't they?
Yes, indeed. It's like, it was exhausting funeral process. It was actually something new for me as well, because I mean, it's already emotionally you were drained from the loss of the parents. And yet, you know, we were at the funeral homes for 7 days in a row for the viewings and the prayings. And even like when I asked our friends, like, yeah, you can come and visit us for 7 days, people were even shocked. Most of my American friends say, oh my gosh, don't you have to work? I say, well, that's the thing. You still have to work. So we all had to take shift. And then even after the day we buried my mom and dad, the next morning I got a call from my sister say, oh, we all were summoned by the monks again. We have to go up to the gravesite now at 10 o'clock the next morning. I say, we just bury them. I say, no, there's another ceremony just so to make sure that now that they are in the new homes, and we have to introduce all the neighbors who are at the graveside to looking out for them. And then from there on, then there's another tradition every 7 days from that. And so it just keeps going. So in a way, it's just like it never stopped. As a matter of fact, we're still visiting. There's a shrine still at the temple of my parents. We still visit them every Sunday as well.
There's something very reassuring about that. It's like it keeps going. It's like, you know, the family visit still happens, right?
Yeah.
I was wondering, are there any other thoughts about the production? You know, you're still a little bit away from it opening, and I'm wondering, you know, you've been rehearsing and been working on the sound design and the music, and I'm just wondering, as this is happening, what is happening to you as the creator of this when you're looking at it as an arts project? You know, what's happening to you? Have there been some surprises for you?
Certainly. Every day is not a surprise. Even my dancers, the collaborator, every time they come in, it's like, oh, now what? I mean, there's always something that's coming up that for all of us to learn. As an artist making the product itself is constantly shifting and changing as we're adding another elements into it. This is actually the biggest production to date that I have done. Even though it's as personal as it is, the visual is quite dramatic. That's all I can say for now. When the audience coming in there, the set is incredible. It's simple, but yet once everything is in its operation, the film was all the way around. Audience have a different experience, depends on where you sit, because there's 6 projectors going all at once. And we all perform not just for one phase, but there's 4th phase that we have to deal with. So in a way, we constant shifting. The audience is not like just in front of us, but behind us, on the sides, and so on. So but for personal, it's as we now wrapping it, and we did a rough run through just last week, I had to put myself into as a performer. And that's really put myself back into all of this journey from where it all started. And it got a little emotional as well, because now I have to literally revisit where it all began. And that's when the core has hit me quite a bit. And then I say, oh, now I have to prepare for this part is mentally, not just physically, to going through it for the production's run.
Not an easy thing to do. Not an easy thing at all. And I totally understand that. I just know, having seen your work before, that you conceptually have a very unique kind of way of approaching dance too, where it is sort of more immersive. I've been to some of your concerts where people are just sort of almost in your laps, you know? So this piece is probably one of the longest though that you've done, right? It's how long does it play without intermission?
It's almost an hour. Originally it was designed for 7 sections with 7 minutes. So I thought, oh yeah, that's 49 minutes. But then there's transitions and then of course my journal entries. And so when it's all said out and done, it's roughly around 55 minutes. But there's so much elements into it too. I mean, there's flowers, flyings, there's waters, basins out there, just because I want the spirits of our loved ones always present with us. There is an intangible elements that I want to be included in it. And so those water as there from the beginning to the end, and there's also ashes. So yes, it is. I mean, I've been known to bringing all of this cinematographic things for it. But that's how I want the audience to, not just as a quiet observer, but literally an active members of the production itself.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, because I always get inspired when I see your work, you know, and hopefully I can steal from you.
Oh, no. You're welcome.
No, kidding. But, you know, I do, coming to see your work, you really do present a new way of looking things from an artistic point of view that really helps me as a theater artist. So I really appreciate that. Min Tran, always a pleasure. Thank you for joining me on Stage and Studio. I'm going to give the info one more time. Annika Impermanence debuts February 21st through the 24th at Reed College's Performing Arts Building in the Massey Performance Lab on the first floor. The building is located at 3203 Southeast Woodstock Boulevard in Portland, and tickets are available at eventbrite.com. But go to stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio where you can get that link, as well as a podcast to Mintron's interview. Mintron, always a pleasure. Thank you for joining me on Stage and Studio.
Thank you for having me here.
Before we go today, this is the last weekend for Media Rights Theater Diaspora's production Here on This Bridge, the ISM Project. It closes this weekend, February 7th through the 10th. The 70-minute piece of personal stories by six actors will be followed by a short conversation between the audience, the artists, and community leaders. More info at mediarights.org or get a suggested donation tickets at brownpapertickets.com. That's it for Stage and Studio. I'll have this show online at stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio, as well as on iTunes. Check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/stageandstudio, and tweet me at stage, the letter in studio. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts. We're going out with music by Heather Perkins.
KBOOK Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor La Segua, running February 7th to March 2nd.